98.4 Capital FM. I'm so excited. It's our first Woman Crush Wednesday of 2022. That's right. Every second Wednesday, we invite a prominent woman, a lady with her lady parts and her lady job to tell us all about her lady things. Not really.
Never misses opportunity to embarrass me in the studio. You know what I mean?
I mean, we love Women Crush Wednesday for different reasons, I feel. But it's not about gender. We're not focusing on gender and we don't want to. That's just a by the way. That doesn't mean anything. Just the fact that you have lady parts, just like I do. Yeah. Dr. Angela Migoa, you are a pediatric rheumatologist at Aga Khan University Hospital. But before that, you are a person. Please define yourself. Why am I talking about you? You define yourself.
Let me start by saying, thank you. Let me start by saying I'm really humbled and honored to be on your show today. It's really a privilege and thank you for having me.
That never happens.
No, thank you.
Thank you for coming. I mean, it really means a lot to us that you're here because we started Women Crush Wednesdays last year and we've only had the most incredible women on the show.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm not sure. I think it was Davina who found you and said, we have to get this woman in for our first Woman Crush Wednesday of 2022.
So I applaud you for all this great work you're doing.
Thank you.
So I am Angela Nyangore Migoa, a proud young Kenyan Catholic lady, Pan-African at heart.
Boom.
And I say I'm a promoter of authentic living.
Oh,
well, that's awesome. I love that.
I do love that.
You know, sometimes we define ourselves as our profession all the time.
Yeah. Yes.
But we are much more than that.
We are. We're more than our profession, our gender, all of these things. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're a Kenyan first and foremost. I love that. Yes. Trained?
Yes.
Here?
Yes. So I did my elementary school, high school, and my first degree in medicine. Here, my first degree was at University of Nairobi.
Shout out.
Yeah. of course, I have to acknowledge also my primary school was Consolata Primary. Yes. My high school was Kianda High School.
Oh, nice.
And then, of course, my first degree in medicine, University of Nairobi. Then I did my master's in pediatrics and child health at the Aga Khan University Medical College, East Africa. And then I was fortunate to get a scholarship through the Canadian government to pursue my third degree in pediatric rheumatology at McGill University in Quebec
my
province.
Third degree. Let me look through them.
McGill is one of the most prominent schools in North America. Yes, especially for medicine. That's incredible.
But that's what's amazing about Aga Khan University Hospital is that you're teaching and learning and
doing
helping
research,
and doing.
Yes, and doing community service, you know.
Okay.
A whole 360 degree approach to healthcare.
But you're one of only two pediatric rheumatologists in East and Central Africa. Are you serious?
Yes.
So first of all, I mean, that's amazing, but why the shortage? Is there an issue here? Or
I think, well, you know, as a society evolves, the needs also evolve.
Mm.
And the reality is, you know, from the, you know, post-independence period, our key focus was to have our children survive.
Mm.
You know, so the focus was on all those diseases that were causing early deaths, you know. So that's why pneumonia, vomiting, diarrhea were the key diseases to be focused on. And the truth is, we've really made significant gains. And I really applaud our government for this because, and I'm not just saying that because I'm Kenyan, you know, when it comes to the gains we've made in child health, they are significant. So now we have children who are surviving longer.
When you say the changes or the improvements in child health is significant, are significant, we're talking, you know, it's not been that long since we've started to take notice of of kids' health in this degree. So a decade, maybe a decade and a half, where things have really changed, right?
Yes. But remember, Fareed, for that change to happen, the groundwork has to be done.
Sure,
you know? So a lot of things happen in the background that we might not have seen the results immediately, but now we are seeing the benefits of that.
As a pediatric rheumatologist, though, how do you, I mean, I can't even imagine what it must feel like to have these little people, these babies come to you and they're so sick, they're so poorly, they're feeling so bad. How do you keep going?
That's $1 million question.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, indirectly, you're asking me, What do you do about your self-care?
Exactly. Oh my God, I love this woman. Do you only deal with little people, or can I come to you and just be like, just hold me?
No, I just deal with the babies, please. Yeah. So, you know, how do you deal with self-care? I think the first and critical step is you need to know yourself.
Mm.
You really must, you know, and it takes a lot of internal work. You must know your strengths.
Yeah.
You must know your weaknesses. And it's not possible to do that on your own. You need what one of my coaches says, you need your personal board of directors, you know, people, accountability partners, people who encourage you to aspire to be a better version of yourself from all fronts, you know, spiritual front, financial front, social front, economic front, from all facets of life. And when you have that personal board of directors, they help you have a proper introspection of your strengths and your weaknesses. And they help bolster your strengths and help you overcome your weaknesses. So for me, that has been very key. And I like taking a break.
but I would imagine in your line of work, you probably do come across some... I mean, for lack of a better word, heartbreaking cases where you might clock off at 5 p.m. or whatever time you finish your work.
Mm-hmm.
You get home, and I'm certain that in the back of your mind, it's very hard to stop thinking about what you've seen during the day. I would imagine. I could be wrong, but I would imagine.
You know, it's true, because we are human. And you know, if you had a friend or somebody you know well who was suffering pain and disability, because that's the real burden of rheumatology diseases, you know, all these diseases of the joints that lead to pain and disability. So yes, we, you know, sometimes it lingers in my soul, these children, but you have to be intentional to make a break and say, okay, I'm now at home, I'm now with my friends, I'm now with my siblings. They also deserve my undivided attention.
Is part of the medical train, before we get into what rheumatology is, because I think as like myself, who found out really what it is yesterday, after doing a bit of research on you, is part of the medical training the psychological, emotional element of letting go when you're not actively treating or helping somebody?
You have hit the nail on the head, Fareed. I often tell people, you know, Fareed, you cannot give what you don't have.
Right.
You understand?
Yeah.
And according to the WHO, what's the definition of wealth? Yeah. The total physical, mental, emotional, and social well-being.
Right.
So when somebody comes to my clinic, if I'm not physically, mentally, emotionally, and socially well, how will they be able to get that from me?
That's very
true. You know, so you know, I can't say that it's easy, Fareed. No, I'd be lying if I said it's easy, but you have to be intentional to keep renewing those facets of your life so that the people you serve can also ultimately benefit.
That can't be easy, though.
It can be easy. And you know, I'll tell you, with this with the COVID pandemic, there was some work that was done by my esteemed colleagues, Dr. Edith Kuoba and the Dean of Aga Khan University, Professor Lukoya Toli. And they surveyed about 1,259 healthcare providers during this pandemic, just delving into their, you know, mental well-being.
Mm.
And their results were shocking. They found about 66% of the respondents were very concerned and worried about the pandemic. About 30% of the respondents expressed or were found to have depression. Another 36% were found to have anxiety. And listen to this, about 66% of the respondents had post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm telling you this because even us as healthcare workers, it's not that we are exempt from some of these challenges that all our other fellow Wana Inchi also face. But that's why I said earlier, you must know yourself. You must know that I'm having this challenge. And when you know it, Fareed, then you reach out for help.
Mm.
You know?
That's right. You cannot pour from an empty cup. We're going to take a little bit of a break now. I mean, did we not tell you that our Women Crush Wednesday of 2022 was going to blow you away? Dr. Angela Migoa, we will tell you, we will ask you more. And in fact, actually, we're just going to be like, save us. Save us.
She's already told you you're too old for her services.
But I'm not too old for a cuddle.
No, that's true. It's 23 minutes past 8. Good morning.
Wake up. Tune in. Capital in the Morning. Spreading positive vibes every morning on 98.4 Capital FM with Davina and Fareed.
Back to the hits.
Back to me.
She's just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy. Lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away. Oh, she got both feet on the ground, and she's burning it down. Oh, she got her head in the clouds, and she's not backing down. This girl is on fire.
Alicia Keys, Girl on Fire, for our guest this morning as we celebrate women on a Women Crush Wednesday.
Listen, she's
all the music will represent this particular hour that we have.
I mean, I was going to say, Fareed, it is Women Crush Wednesday. Dr. Angela Migoa is one of only two pediatric rheumatologists in East and Central Africa, but I don't think she can help a girl on fire. Like, I was just like, huh? And now what?
I believe it means something different the way Alicia Keys is saying it, but there you go. Okay. All right, 28 minutes past 8. We do have sports on the way in just a few minutes, but before we get into that, you are a pediatric rheumatologist, mm-hmm. one of two mm-hmm. in the country. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you friends with the other one?
Yeah. Oh my
god! You guys like just absolutely. Vibe all the time.
Absolutely.
They've got the smallest WhatsApp group in the world. Just two of them, right?
Yeah, two of them.
You need at least three for that. Yeah. No, but what? So you know, Davina mentioned something to me this morning mm-hmm. As we were waiting for you to come in.
Yeah.
That arthritis is mm-hmm. is a problem mm-hmm. amongst children. I had mm-hmm. never heard of that. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, mm-hmm. so what is a pediatric rheumatologist?
Yeah. So, Fareed, you know, the reason why our body structures are not floating all over the place, they're held in position by what we call connective tissue, okay? And rheumatology as a whole is a study of the diseases that affect this connective tissue, you know? And this includes your muscles, your bones, your joints, and all the ligaments. So that's our area of expertise, all the diseases that affect that those tissues. And those tissues, you can imagine, they are found everywhere, head to toe.
Right.
You know? So our patients can have symptoms involving the brain, the eye, the heart, the kidney, the feet, everywhere. So in summary, we treat diseases that affect connective tissue. But the one that people identify with most commonly is arthritis. You know, the other one that also is quite commonly known is lupus. Mm. Right?
Okay. Uh-huh,
so lupus
okay.
is within our scope.
Right.
Okay. You know, those are the diseases that many people resonate with or could identify with.
I mean, I hate to say it, but it is it's trending right now. Lupus, like I'm only just starting to realize what lupus is, if I even know at all.
So maybe just tell us what is lupus.
So lupus is what we call. We say it's the prototypic autoimmune disease. That's a handful. What does that even mean? Each and every one of us has an inherent, formidable, and very effective defense system, which in medicine we call the immune system. You know, this is the soldier of your body. You can think of it like, you know how as a country we have the Kenya Defense Forces protecting our country? So your immune system is your KDF, protecting your body, all right? In essence, just like our Kenya Defense Forces, they should protect our country from foreign invaders, isn't it? All right? So if your KDF is working well, your immune system is working well, it should protect you from all the germs and bugs that could cause disease. But sometimes things don't work as well. Imagine a situation where the Kenya Defense Forces turn on the citizens.
Imagine.
And begin attacking the citizens. That is catastrophic, isn't it? So in lupus, what happens? Your innate defense system, your innate immune system, instead of focusing its efforts to attack the enemy, all the germs and bugs, begins to attack your own body.
It's like confused.
Yeah, it's like having a coup against you.
But you can't stop it.
So what we do in the treatment of lupus is like we retrain the army and tell this natural defense system, stop attacking the body. The body is not the one that is dangerous. Focus your efforts on attacking all the bugs and the germs that are causing disease. And so that's why we have a saying that lupus has 1,000 faces. It can look like anything because you have your natural defense system everywhere, head to toe. And there's no telling where the attack will begin.
So it depends on the specific part of the body that lupus is attacking for you guys to identify what it is.
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head.
But does it feel like a fairly recent disease? Because or is it just that we're getting to name it and label it? Or is it something that is a response to our diet, our environment, our things? Like,
so you're partly right. Because we cannot deny the fact that the environment we are in plays a big role in the diseases we see. But yet again, we say in medicine, the eye only sees what the mind knows.
Oof.
So if in the beginning our focus was, let us stop the deaths of people from infectious diseases, the focus is there. So people who are now having diabetes, hypertension wasn't so key. But you see, now we are surviving longer. Our environment has changed. Our lifestyle has changed. So now other diseases are creeping in. So I think it's a mix of both. That the awareness has increased, yes. Our environment has changed, all right. We are surviving longer. But the truth is the disease was there way back. We probably just did not make the diagnosis.
That's incredible when you think about it. And obviously with more information, especially the last, you know, half decade, mm-hmm. where medicine has really changed, mm-hmm. right, in terms of information and access to mm-hmm. information, you're finding out more.
Exactly.
But that's a good and a bad thing, I guess, in a way,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to take a break because pediatric rheumatology also deals with arthritis mm-hmm. in children, something mm-hmm. I didn't think was mm-hmm. possible until this morning. We're going to talk about that when we come back. And, of course, the great work you're doing at the Aga Khan University Hospital here in Nairobi. Take a quick break, come back with the sports, and then we'll be back with our Women Crush Wednesday.
You can get the day started listening to the Karens of the world.
Stay up till the morning.
Or you can pop in those earbuds and listen to Capital in the Morning on 98.4 Capital FM.
I used to bite my tongue and hold my breath, scared to rock the boat and make a mess. So I said quietly.
There we go, Roar, Katy Perry at 17 minutes to 9, right here on your best mix of music, 98.4. I've picked all the music that I've picked in this hour is for you.
Thank you, Fareed. Thank you so much.
That is the voice of Dr. Angela Migoa, one of only two pediatric rheumatologists in East and Central Africa, and my favorite thing you've done, mm-hmm. the president of the Pediatric Society of the African League Against Rheumatism. Do you have a cape, red boots, gold bracelets?
And a headquarters.
And a headquarters.
I think that's work in progress.
Come on. And you need stickers. We need a cartoon strip made of you.
Like a pediatric rheumatology mobile, like a car. No.
I mean, it doesn't roll off the tongue. What's your superhero talent? What's it called? Your superpower? Speaking French.
No. I figured out.
You know what's a superpower? You'll be surprised. It's actually music.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, music and healing.
Oh, and yeah.
Healing is a superpower. So as we talk more about pediatric rheumatology, mm-hmm. we did say before the break that, mm-hmm. you know, and I was surprised, A, that children can get arthritis.
Yeah. Yeah.
B, yeah. I said, but it's not that common. And you mm-hmm. said, actually,
yeah,
it is. So this yeah. is a serious issue.
It is. And I'll just, you know, share some figures. It's estimated or, you know, postulated for every 1,000 children, about 3 to 5 would have arthritis. You know, would have painful swollen joints. That's what arthritis is, you know, painful swollen joints. So given the population of our country, and that about 50% of the population are children, about 20-25 million are children, then we are looking at about 150,000 children out there, you know, in our country with arthritis.
You talk of 3 to 5% in medical terms. That's yeah. that's yeah. very high.
No, 3 to 5 per 1,000.
Per 1,000. Per 1,000. Okay, but still, yeah. that's very high.
I'll give you, you know, let's look at the HIV burden among teenagers. All right, in our country, as per the last Kenya data health survey, they postulated that there are about 133,000. Teenagers with HIV, and I've told you the children with to have arthritis at about 150,000. Wow. You see, the numbers are not different, not so different. But the challenge with the children with arthritis, they are plagued to live with the scourge of pain, disability, and of course, ultimately, with all diseases, the risk of death.
So we're talking about kids from. Is this something that can happen from birth?
Spot on, because pediatrics covers the age range from 0 to 18.
So you're dealing with patients that cannot tell you
that's
where
it
hurts and what is hurting.
Spot on, Farid. The youngest child I ever saw with arthritis in my practice was a 10-week-old baby.
But why would you get arthritis that young? First of all, why do you get arthritis? I don't even...
So, you know, with most diseases, yeah, they are like... two fundamental issues that lead to the disease presenting itself. One is that, yes, there's possibly a genetic risk that puts you at risk of getting the disease. And more often than not, that we might not be able to change. But in the background of a genetic risk, certain triggers in the environment tip you over to get the disease. Mm. All right. And some of these triggers are things like infections, you know, that can tip you over to get arthritis. It's not a secret that, you know, sometimes as you move farther away from the equator, some of the diseases we treat as rheumatologists increase in number, you know. So the environment does have a role to play.
Is it weather that plays a role in it? The equator?
No, I wouldn't really say weather. I would say maybe weather is associated. You know, in medicine we use very technical terms. Yeah. I don't want to say weather is causing arthritis, you know. But, you know, for example, many people say that when it's cold, my child who has arthritis, their joints seem to worsen, you know. But I would say probably the temperature, the environmental temperature, changes what we call like the hormonal axis. You know, the hormones are the chemicals that regulate how your body functions, all right? So the temperatures outside can affect the hormonal axis. Again, when it's cold, you're likely to get lots of flus, coughs, colds. Infections can make your arthritis worse.
I see.
Yeah, so I would say associated more than causing.
So
yeah,
but basically,
yeah.
as you said, environment.
Environment, right. That's it.
I've got a very important question. Okay. Very.
All right.
Okay,
all
right. I'm the important, like I'm the serious one. Huh? At Aga Khan University Hospital,
yes.
in the pediatric crew, you're a crew.
We are a crew, a formidable crew, if I must say.
With capes.
With capes.
What makes you not scary? You know, hospitals can be scary. What is the pediatric crew at Aga Khan University Hospital doing to make it not scary? Do you have like fun colors? Do you have stickers? Do you give lollipops?
Yeah.
I need to know.
That's a great question. And I'm not just saying that because I work there. I really count myself fortunate to work with such an incredible team of what I believe is the most diverse spectrum of specialists, not just in Kenya, but in the region. As I said earlier, we take care of children from 0 years to 18 years. Mm. And, you know, in our Department of Pediatrics, we have got the experts who deal with brain problems, the neurologists, those who deal with children with developmental issues like autism, allergy issues, heart issues, chest issues, hormonal issues like diabetes. So I think one of the things that helps us is the synergy in the team. That's important, because then you create a certain energy, you know, that's important. Yeah, a certain vibe that's important for healing. That's one. And then the truth is, you tend to behave a little bit like your patients in a sense. So you'll find our approach as a team is very child friendly, even how we speak and how we talk, how we dress. Like, you're always wearing, I wear different colored scrubs. Amazing. You know, rainbow like pink scrubs. And so, white. So and I always have flowers on my head.
Do you need a tea girl? That's all I'm saying.
So is it the neurologists that are the sort of like the ones that act a bit older? And
No, not really. Honestly, I know that my colleagues, just by virtue of the kind of clientele we have, our approach is different.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I would say the synergy that we create, me personally, I just put flowers on my head, different colored scrubs, and I get going.
Right. And I'm sure the kids feel very comfortable with you and your colleagues as well. Yeah. But there is obviously a very difficult part to your work. And, you know, you're talking about a 10-week-old baby that has arthritis, a child that you've just diagnosed with lupus. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll get to the whole COVID thing in a few minutes. But when you're, you know, you obviously have to have very, very, very difficult conversations with parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you handle, I mean, that has to be, I would imagine that's one of the hardest parts of your job.
For real, it's often heart-wrenching. Often heart-wrenching when you have to tell a parent that your child has lupus. I mean, as much as I'm a specialist in it, I often feel sad, because I know it's not a journey of 2 days. It's probably years. And, you know, medicine, just like all other fields, is very dynamic and it's changing. And now more than ever, it's not only important to have the scientific knowledge, but we have to aspire to improve our emotional and cultural intelligence, so that you can understand the cultural context of your patient. And just like you guys did today, before you hosted me, you prepared, isn't it? Right? You knew what I love, what I'm passionate about. So for us, when you are working on your cultural and emotional intelligence, you do the background check on your patient and their family, trying to understand for that community, for that family, what are their fears? What is their understanding of a chronic disease? If it's a child who you think you are likely to lose, what is their understanding of death? The other thing that is hard is also the spiritual aspect, you know, because you could find somebody who's a deeply religious, you know, a profound Buddhist. Then the onus is on me to go and read about Buddhism and how Buddhists understand the concept of death.
So you do all of that.
But it's important so that when I'm talking to you that your child is likely to pass on, I am speaking in a language you resonate with.
Is that something every doctor does, or is it something that you've taken as part of your journey?
I guess it's part of my journey. But even in the training, I recall in my undergraduate years when we would do our psychiatry module, those are the concepts that they would share with us. But it is what happens. You people, you've exhibited it today. Mm. You did your background check. You're not rheumatologists.
No.
But you went and you did your homework.
Can we go and study under her? Like, Aga Khan University Hospital. Like, whatever she's teaching, I'm studying. I'm ready.
Don't forget, I trained there. Oh, so some of my skills I got from Aga Khan.
Never too late to learn.
Never too late to learn.
Maybe a final question is, let's take, for example, you know, you're dealing with an infectious condition.
Yes.
Maybe a viral or immune deficiency condition.
Yes.
And then now you've got the last 23 months where a brand new pandemic is in, and obviously, you know, you've got a sick child or adolescent, and COVID. Has that changed the way you've had to practice in the last 2 years?
It has transformed. I must say, it has transformed medical practice. And I'll just give you an example that I had yesterday.
So I had this wonderful young girl who had arthritis and was doing very well. And I last saw her in February 2020, before the pandemic was officially announced in our country in March 2020. And I didn't see her. And I kept wondering, you know, where has this young girl been? Because I was like, what is happening to her joints? And she came back to me in clinic yesterday. And as you can imagine, all her joints were not so good. Before the pandemic, Fareed, my gestalt or, you know, knee-jerk reflex would have been, we need to start your arthritis medication like yesterday, all right? And, you know, like I told you earlier, when we treat patients with rheumatology diseases, what we do is we retrain your army, your immune system, your body's KDF. In essence, your body's KDF is too hyper, so I'm trying to tame it down. And I asked her, have you gotten your COVID vaccine? Yeah, because she's 15, 16. So she qualifies. And she says, no. And so I told her and her mom, you know what? I'm giving you the next 1 to 2 months to get the vaccine. Because I know the minute I start the medications, you cannot take the vaccine. Mm. And if you don't take the vaccine, I cannot offer you the protection that is available, because that's what we have for now, right? The vaccine. I can't offer you the protection that's available to prevent you from getting severe COVID. Mm. So you see, at the end of the day, why do we do medicine? We are trying to prevent death and disability. That's the bottom line. And I thought to myself, if I start that medication now, the risk of her succumbing to COVID would be higher as opposed to if she got the vaccine. Wow. So you see, I put on hold my desire to treat.
It's almost as if you have to say, unfortunately, we have to do this.
Yeah, I have to.
As we prepare for that.
Yeah, because COVID could put her down faster than that, right? And she understood. And why that was also important, because she was very open. And she told me that the reason she did not come since 2020, she was scared when she comes into the hospital, she will get COVID. So then I have to allow her the opportunity to get that vaccine to boost her defense against COVID so that she's not fearful of coming, so that her joints will not get distracted, and we can continue our follow-up visits. So it has transformed our practice.
Incredible.
Really, it has.
Incredible. And it's crazy because you can, I got my vaccines at Aga Khan University Hospital. You can go there immediately. You can go today, I hope she's listening, and get your booster.
It's very simple.
And you know, it is
simple.
Free.
Yeah.
You know, I really must applaud our government for this. You know, the stand they took from the onset.
Yep.
Of course, there are always things we can improve on, but really, we really must applaud those efforts.
Oh, yeah. I'm a ball of emotions.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being our first Woman Crush Wednesday. Thank you for starting off this year so strongly, and thank you for the work that you do for our little ones.
Yeah.
And can Fareed and I request a hug, please?
Of course.
Dr. Angela McGaugh, that is our first Woman Crush Wednesday of the year.
Here's Whitney Houston's I'm Every Woman at 9:03. Good morning.
Thank you all so much. Thank you so much.
I'm totally
whatever you want, whatever you need, anything you want.